Hi, I'm Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to the committee for inviting me to be here. And I thoroughly enjoyed myself, and I'd like to thank the committee for the way I've been treated. They even gave me a room, for God's sake. There was a definite improvement when I got to the airport. Usually there's some old jerk like me waiting for me, you know. And,
committee sent me to get you.
And, got it. They sent me two gorgeous young women. I thought, things are looking up here, my God. That was about the end of it, though. So I've had a wonderful time. I want to commend this committee. I want to commend the people that backed this committee. Sometimes, you know, you shovel it against the tide. And there's a lot of tide a lot of times. And there's a lot of people at AA who don't want to see anything happen. They don't want to see any changes. They just want to keep doing it the same dreadful old way they've always done it. And they resent anything. My sponsor always told me that 15% of the people in AA do all the work, and the other 85% job is to criticize the 15%. And it's pretty much worked out that way in the years I've been in AA. And so I commend you, and I don't want you to give up. I want you to keep going. Sometimes I get scared in AA because I'm an old fool. I've been around a long time. I get scared of some of the changes and some of the crap I see. When I see young people like this committee, God, they're just children. Everybody's like young people to me, but, you know, and they're doing this and they're doing it right. They're doing it by the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're meeting their responsibilities and they're bringing their gifts and they're doing what they can. And I'm, you know, it really makes me look to the future with a lot more hope. I really enjoyed the other speakers. Dana gave a terrific talk. Another kid giving talks. What the hell's going on here? But I got a lot from her talk, and I didn't get to hear all of Denny's talk. I only heard about half of it, and I only agreed with half of that. He doesn't give a shit if I agree or not. I don't care that he doesn't care. So I love him. I hadn't known him 2 minutes when I knew I loved him. And I know he cares about AA just as deeply as I do. I don't have to agree with him, though, with everything. Most things, yeah. Some things. A couple of things. Two things. They gave a hell of a talk. And I really enjoyed Lynette's talk. I don't go to Al-Anon per se because I'm married to the queen of all the Al-Anons. So I don't want to go to those meetings. They go, it's him, huh? do you remember that? Don't you think you had a few too many? I used to say you had a few too few. That's your goddamn problem, Lydia. But whenever I'm in a convention or a conference or anything, I always go to as many Al-Anon meetings as I can because I love Al-Anon. I've seen miracles happen in Al-Anon every bit as great as it happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're on our side. And I like to remember that. And I get a big kick out of listening to Al-Anon's talk, especially sick ones like Lynette, you know. We have a lot of fun here. We have a lot of laughter here, don't we? Thank God for the laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. We'd all be dead. I love the laughter in AA. I'm such an alcoholic, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here tonight, safe and sane and sober. In California now we have this three strikes law. It's supposed to strike terror into the hearts of criminals. I had three strikes coming in here. I mean, there's no way I can be sober. You know, I was programmed into my DNA to be an alcoholic. I mean, I'm from a long, long line of Irish Catholics. Protestant? No. One for us that have these things in phone booths. And I don't know if anybody, maybe there's some non-readers here for the last 15 years, but anybody who can read in the last 15 years knows that the science in all its wisdom has discovered that alcoholism is genetically inherited. Honest to God, scientists, tell me more. Yes, that it's actually, you know, it's a hereditary tendency, they like to call it. It's not a tendency in my family, I'll guarantee it. It's supposed to be a recessive gene. In my family, it's a dominant gene. They're all dead. They're all dead. And I'm the only one alive because I came to AA, you know. Grandfathers, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, father, mother, sisters, all dead, all from alcoholism. And so the only thing that could have prevented me from becoming an alcoholic was not to drink. Good shot for you, huh? So I drank, and the DNA took over, and of course I'm capable of not drinking because I am an alcoholic, physically an alcoholic, all right? Secondly, I had a second strike against me. I'm old. You could probably tell that from watching, but right after I had just won World War II, and I went to college right there. And when I went to college and graduated in 1950, I learned something to the marrow of my bones, and that there's only one God, and His name is Sigmund Freud. I learned that psychoanalysis, psychology, was the answer to all of life's problems. And if I was ever going to have anything good happen in my life, I had to find out why I was so crazy. And why I drank like I did. And why I behaved as I did when I drank. And if I could just understand what happened in my psyche, I would be able to do something about it. And I spent hundreds and thousands of dollars on psychoanalysis, psychology, and read every book ever written about psychology and psychoanalysis and understanding yourself and what, you know. And I continued to get drunk and get beaten up and go to jail. And so I knew, though, that the answer was in psychology. And the third strike for me was that I had a good education, and I'm a functioning alcoholic. I don't know how many of you were functioning alcoholics, but I do the job. I have to do 10 times more than you to prove I'm half as good. Does anybody identify with that? You know, I'm a goer and a doer, and I accomplish and I accomplish, and I whip you all. I'm a functioning alcoholic. One guy said a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. That makes Al-Anons go. they don't think that's funny. But I always did the job, you know. I always did the job, and so that was the third strike. So I didn't have a prayer, you know. I had every reason not to ever get sober. And besides, I love to drink. Did you hear Dana this morning? She said it. She said I never liked the taste of alcohol. Honest to God, how did you get here? I love the taste of booze, don't you? Oh, I love it all. I love rum. I love rum. Scotch, I like scotch. That's good, too. Sour mash bourbon whiskey, I like the best. Huh? Oh, I love to drink sour mash bourbon whiskey. Get a little water, just enough to rinse your mouth. You know, big triple shot, I.W. Harper, Yellowstone. And I love that burning. They're having their own meeting right down here. What's the name of your meeting, Sonny? What's the name of your meeting? I thought I was the speaker. Came sir right in front to have his meeting, though. That's good. Sit up front with the winners. And I love that burning of that booze going down. Oh, I love that. Then you rinse your mouth with the water, you know. Then if you want to, you swallow the water. In a real nice restaurant, I used to go, I made a rainbow! Oh, that'll put an Al-Anon right under the table. Whoop! That just, what are you doing down there? For God's sake. But I love that. I just love that booze burning its way down there. And I like to have 10 or 12 more of those. And Then I don't know about you, but I just get out among my people then, huh? You were waiting for me out there to have a good time, huh? We're going to have some fun! Remember that? Oh, I'd love to say that in an AA meeting. All their eyes glaze over. They'll go, oh, yeah. You know what I'm talking about, huh? Fun! Getting beaten to a pulp and go to jail, huh? Fun! Or find your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning. Remember that? With you in it. Fun! I almost died of it, remember? One more good time, you'd have a different speaker tonight, you know? I just damn near died of fun! I couldn't resist it. I could not resist it. You know, even that rotten, horrible, terrible last couple of years, you know, you remember that? Get up in the morning and call Ralph for an hour or so. Ralph. So there's nothing left of you and Ralph. You know, I was sober about 5 years, and I'd been up to the Bakersfield Convention and just having a hell of a good time, and got back home and I had some Mexican dinner. I guess it was the wrong food or something. And I woke up in the middle of the night terribly sick, and I threw up. I was sober 5 years. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on my knees down to Ralph, just me and Ralph. You know. And that's one of the great spiritual awakenings I ever had in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I realized that I had not puked in 5 years. That's a spiritual awakening. I don't know about you, but I used to puke 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week. I thought everybody did. And I said, thank you, God. But I would get out there and have all that fun. And I did. I had a lot of fun out drinking. Oh, boy, I just had a good time. I loved to dance, and I loved to sing. Oh, I love those piano bars. Everybody in the piano bar loved me, except the piano player, of course. But I didn't want you to leave your clothes on when you're singing and all that nonsense. And most of all, I like to fight. I don't know if there are any other fighters. Oh, I was macho when I was a drinker. I would rather fight than anything. Than anything. Which is a shame. I'm no good at it. In my case, you know, the moment I would get enough sauce to become brave, I would lose my muscle coordination. You can get seriously damaged doing that, I'll tell you for sure. But oh, I had so many good times. When I came to AA this time, I was absolutely sure that I would never have a good time again as long as I lived. Because I never had a good time in my life after the age of 16 where booze wasn't connected to it. I mean, I thought booze and good times were synonymous. I didn't think there was any way to have a good time without booze, and I meet a lot of people like that today. And if you're new, and there were some new people to hear today when Denny was talking, I want to tell you, I've had more fun the last 2 weeks than the last 5 years I drank. I laughed harder and more often this weekend over at that goofy table over there with the other non-smokers. I heard some stories over there that turn your blood cold, I'll tell you for sure. What was it? The daughter didn't want him to get married because her father was marrying her sponsor. That's sick! They said she was jealous. I said, of whom? Probably was the sponsor. But anyway, we laughed over there tonight. We just silliness, you know what I mean? And I've laughed harder more often this weekend than the last 5 years I drank. And I was drinking to have fun. I met my wife in college. She was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And you're looking to be abused. You got your boy here, I'll tell you for sure. And we had this dreaded dual disease of alcoholism and Catholicism. And well, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes, seemed like to me. But it seemed like every time I come out of a blackout, who is that? And they grew, those kids. We ended up with five of them, and as the years went on, our kids got bigger and bigger and weirder and weirder, and God knows I got weirder and weirder and weirder, and Lord knows she got weirder and weirder and weirder, and I became a school teacher finally, and we moved to Oceanside, California in 1961, where I taught at Oceanside High until I retired, or Oceanside High and El Camino High. And I was a successful school teacher, if that's not a contradiction. I always did the job. I always did 10 times more than you. I always got very high ratings. I always got all kinds of recommendations and that kind of thing. But I was dying. My disease kept right on progressing through the years. I got more and more afraid of those blackouts. Remember those? No, of course you don't remember those blackouts. I mean, I've been looking for somebody in AA for years. I'm trying to find somebody who had good blackouts. Somebody said, oh, yes, I had delightful blackouts. Thank you. But I never had a good one. I don't know about you. I never woke up in the morning and found I'd helped the little sisters of the poor all night or something like that. After I had blackouts, there were wrecked cars and jail and beatings and, you know, people hating me and children with their eyes all big and filled with fear. Never had a good blackout. As the years went on, I became more and more paranoid about those blackouts, because when you're a teacher, you know, when you do the kind of things I do in blackouts, they have a tendency to call you up to Sacramento and ask for your license back, you know, because they frown on, you know, like biting bartenders in the face is not social drinking, you know. And places I used to drink, they used to wear clip ties so I couldn't get them over the bar. I get, got a big scar. They say, oh, you drink where Roach drinks, huh? Okay. I became a very successful teacher, and but as my alcoholism went right on. The first time I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, another guy and I had this surfboard shop down on the beach, which we got. I'm still a surfer. I'm the oldest one in the world. I'm out there, you know, I've had a 5-way heart bypass, and I'm 60 pounds overweight. I'm out there. Kids love me there. They think I'm great. Help Mr. Roach back on his board. There you go. They think I'm terrific, you know. But I love to surf. But anyway, we got this idea of having a surfboard shop down on the beach, and we would rent surfboards and give surf lessons and fix surfboards and stuff. And a guy donated us this, about the size of this podium up here. Guy donated us this building right on the water, can you imagine? Right on the beach. It had been all vandalized and everything. And we fixed the building all up and put some windows in and painted it. And we got a refrigerator. And several months later, we got some surfboards. No big hurry there. We loved that place. We got it in the summertime. We said, we'll make enough money in the summertime. We'll never have to teach school again. We'll make $1 million. Oh, we loved that place. It was right on the water. We had these two chaise lounge chairs in the evenings. People come down and say, I'd like to rent a surfboard. Get out of here. We're watching a sunset now. You know, we were sunset connoisseurs. We used to measure them by martinis. Looks like about an 8 tonight, Woody. Best one we ever had was a 15 martini sunset. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. Remember that? But we did really well with that shop. In the winter of 1965, we were closed. Had gone back to school. It was freezing cold. We couldn't. The shop wasn't open. But I went down to repair a surfboard. Been sitting around the shop there, and so I went down on a Sunday morning. And I had a hangover. Big surprise. I was really thirsty, and I had gotten the board and started standing on the board, and I went to the refrigerator to get a Coke or something because I was so thirsty. And my buddy had been there the night before, and he left about this much vodka in a half pint. And there was some orange juice in the refrigerator, and I thought, boy, that would put the... Now, I wasn't a morning drinker in 1965. Never had a morning drink as far as I was a weekend drinker, and I remember, you take Wednesday off. I'm a weekend drinker. And and there was just enough for a little light drink in there, so I mixed it up and I drank it. Tasted good, went down fine, and I started working on that surfboard, and I was sanding away, you know, and that booze went all through my bloodstream and got to my brain, and my brain talked to me. Did yours used to talk to you too? Well, my mind still talks to me today, if you're new. I just don't pay any attention to it anymore because I have met the enemy. He lives in here. Only enemy I have in the world. Only enemy I have lives right in here. All of them. I'd settle for schizophrenia any day, wouldn't you? Only two of them, for God's sake, especially if they got along. But that morning, after about 20 minutes, my brain said to me, "Shame on you, Cliff. Shame, 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 shame. That was Woody's booze you drank there. Why don't you go up to the liquor store and get old Woody a pint?" And I did, just the kind of a nice guy I am. As a matter of fact, that afternoon I got him a fifth. And I ended up just, my dad used to call it Borey-eyed drunk. Just falling down, resin all over me. The board was a mess. The shop was a mess. And I was drunk. And I crawled home. I literally crawled home 11 blocks. And I said to my wife, "I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to." And she, the next morning, reminded me of that. And she had cut this thing out of the paper about Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know why she thought to do that. She was in the terminal stages of pre-Al-Anonism at the time. She had one of those pre-Al-Anon tics, you know, where their eye goes like this all the time. Had her sense of humor surgically removed many years before. And so I called AA. Sincerely. Only time in my life I ever sincerely called AA. And I went to some meetings. After I'd gone to two meetings, I realized I'd made a grievous error in judgment. I told you, I'm educated way beyond my intelligence. I have master's degrees on my master's degrees, you know, and I realized sitting around these little tables that these people had the collective IQ of an orange, you know what I mean? I remember the third night this guy said, "Well, we keep it simple here." I said, "No shit. You could have fooled me, Hiram." Oh, my God. On the wall they had a sign. It said, "First things first." Okay. What the hell does that mean? I always do third things first. What? Better than that, though. Right next to what they had a sign was even better than that. It said, you ready? "Think." Yeah, I'll get right on that, I hope. That's my problem, for God's sakes! And I would whine and snivel in the meeting. And after about 10 minutes, somebody would say, "Hey, you're whining and sniveling." Well, they didn't know that I was sensitive, too. And so they would hurt my feelings, and so I would punish that meeting. I would not go back there again. And after a little while, there weren't that meeting. I ran out of meetings to punish after a little while. But they had a little speaker meeting there in Oceanside on Sunday evenings, and I would go to that. I didn't drink for 5 months, and the pain was intense. But I would go to that speaker meeting once a week, and I would sit in the back. I would wait for the meeting to start, and then I would skulk in the back door, you know. And I would grab that loser chair, you know, the one right by the... And somebody else had it. I'd say, "Give me that chair. That's my chair." You know. And I would sit in the back of the room all scooched up, listening, you know. Sounded to me like everybody who talks name was Clem. And he'd been out of bib overalls about an hour and a half, and... His wife's name was Martha. And here's what I heard. They didn't say this. If you're new, they didn't say this. This is what my keen brain heard them say. I heard them say that they had been good, decent, happy, hard-working, sincere folk their whole lives. But they had drunk too much. And after they drunk too much for a few years, it had really started interfering with their lives. So they'd come here to the A&A, they always said it that way, and put the plug. And they had returned then. They had returned to being good, decent, happy, sincere, worthwhile folk again. It sounded like they had been rehabilitated. You know the word rehabilitated? My hero in 1965 was a guy named Eldridge Cleaver. He was a black militant terrorist. That's my politics in 65. Blow it up or burn it down. I didn't really give a shit which, you know. I was for peace. And if you weren't for peace, I'd kill you. And Eldridge had given this terrific speech a few months earlier. He was talking that night about the prison system in California. He was talking about how they were always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they'd never known? He had never been rehabilitated. And you can't rehabilitate somebody who has never been rehabilitated. So I don't know about you, but that's how I felt in the A&A. Evidently, you people, claiming you people at some point in your lives had been okay. I had never been okay. I was crazy when I was 4 years old and I hadn't had a drink yet. When I was 4 years old, I have a crystal clear memory of myself when I was 4 years old. Used to stand on the speedway in Venice where we lived, waiting for cars. There weren't that many in those days when I was a little kid. And I would stand there like a little soldier at his damn post, waiting for a car. And when a car would come, I'd go. And I'd wait for another one. And people would come driving, they'd say, oh, look at the little, what the hell is that? And the reason I did this was I didn't know how to do this yet. You know what I mean? If I didn't know how to do that, I'd have done that. That's how I felt when I was 4 years old. That's how I felt when I was 4 years old. And I hadn't had a drink. And that's how I felt my whole life. I don't know about you. This is my story. I carried around a big rock in the middle of my belly when I was 4 years old. And it hurt. It's a hell of a painful way to live with a big rock in the middle of your... On a good day, it was about the size of a softball. On a bad day, it was about the size of a basketball. But it didn't matter what its size was. That black ball ruled my life. I never had a thought. I never had a reaction. I never took an action in my life that wasn't generated and controlled by that black ball down in the middle of my belly. And that's a hell of a painful way to live. But when I was 16 years old, I made a great discovery. I discovered that after I drank about 40 minutes, I would disengage whatever lobe of the brain was connected to the black ball. And then like for about 8 minutes, everything in my life was all right. There wasn't anything wrong with me for about 8 minutes. And if you would have stopped me on the street and said, what's serenity? I would have said, it's about 8 minutes, 40 minutes into my drink. And I don't know about you, but I could not live without that 8 minutes. I could not have survived. You would have had to kill me or I would have had to kill you. I lived on the edge of psychosis my whole life, right on the edge. All that functioning notwithstanding. All the great evaluations, all the honors, all the acclamation, all the degrees. I lived on the cutting edge of psychosis. One step either way and they would take... And the only thing that saved me was the 8 minutes a day. You know, and a lot of times we have to give talks for like the Lions Club and people like that. I don't tell the Lions Club about the 8 minutes and I don't tell them about the rock. They look at you funny, don't they, Earth people? I mean, you went to jail how many times? You were beaten to a pulp 1,000 times? You wrecked 13 cars for 8 minutes a day? But I tell you because you know what I mean. It's a horrible way to live.
But if that's the only option I have, then that's how I'm going to live. Because I don't have any other way to live. So I'll take it. And one night I was sitting there in that meeting and I thought, they want me to give up the 8 minutes to hang around with Clem and Martha. And I resigned from AA. Did you ever do that? Really upsets them. Oh, it's just awful. Cliff's dying. And so the next 5 years, I'm in and out of AA. I'm in for like 30 days, drunk for 2 years. In for 40 days, drunk for a year and a half. Real slips, you know what I mean. One time I came in the afternoon about 4 o'clock. And these Don the Barber and these other three guys, you ever been quadro-stepped? These guys got on all four sides of me, you know, just woo, woo, woo. Oh, I got the message that day. I mean, I levitated out of the building. And I had this buddy, Big John. He was worse than me. And I went over to Big John's house and pounded on the door. I said, John, we're alcoholics, and we have to go to AA. Big John says, okay. Just missed it by 3 weeks. I led Big John to the meeting that night. Became his sponsor. And the next day, we both got drunk. Then I went right on functioning, and I went, and I destroyed. I'll tell you a story that my late sponsor, my little sponsor Bill, told me. I always have to tell a story, and I almost always do. 5 or 6 years before I got to AA this time, the principal called me in one day. He did a lot of that. And he'd gotten a flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament, which was being held at San Diego State College, just 30 miles down the road. Oceanside, just 30 miles above San Diego. And he said, I had a speech class, so he said, well, I bet you your students could get a lot out of that. Why don't you go to that? So I wasn't interested, but I found 8 kids, wanted to give it a try, and I took a half an hour, taught them what I knew. And we went down the road to San Diego State College, 30 miles, and God Almighty, we were amazed. I mean, there were like 50 schools in this tournament, like 500 contestants. All the boys had 3-piece suits and girls were in Levi's. We didn't know what we were. They killed us. We got slaughtered. We didn't win a round. I mean, they ground us into the goddamn dirt. I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't care for losing. And I'm about half steamed anyway, and I go in the coach's room. There are about 20 of them in the room there, and they've been doing this for years. They're pals, huh? They're buddies, and they snubbed me. I felt like they snubbed me. So I hung around all day so they could just snub me longer. You know how we are. And one guy really bothered me. He had a lot of hair. That ticked me off right away, you know. It was one of those gray, beautiful gray hair, you know, not a hair out of place. 9 barbers to get it right. Had about $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him, you know. And all of a sudden, about 2 in the afternoon, this white-haired jerk turns to me and said, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, Oceanside. He said, oh, where's that? 30 miles up the road. Where's that? I don't know about kind of drunk you are, but he gave me a resentment. I went back to that high school and I built a speech team. And he wasn't out of my mind for the next 4 or 5 years. And I built a speech team at that Oceanside High. I built a juggernaut speech team. I built a damn speech. We used to get off the bus and look like one of those clown cars. We just kept getting on. And the other coaches, the other teachers went home at 3, 4 o'clock. I was worked till 9:30, 10 o'clock every night, screaming and yelling in the face, coaching! Guy next door says, I love to watch them leaving your room wiping the spit off their glasses. Yeah. Reporter said to my kid one time, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. And he wasn't lying. Oh, you ought to try to do that. Make 150 people do what they don't want to do. I mean, they'll wind you up. I mean, the nerves hang up in your fingers that far. Your brain's too big for your head. And I don't eat all day. That's the kind of drunk I am. I don't drink all day. I don't eat all day. I drink 400 cups of coffee, and I stay pissed off. Then that last kid leaving the evening, you know, "Good night, Mr. Ross." "Yeah, good night." And out in the glove compartment of the car, seal unbroken all day, just waited in the car for me, half a pint of vodka, huh? Seal unbroken, calling to me all day, "Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling." And that vodka's getting hot in that bottle, huh? Oh, I love to talk about hot vodka at Al-Anon meetings. They all go, "Ooh." You know what I mean, though, huh? And that last kid would leave, and I'd get in that car and light those big cigars I smoked in those days, and I'd open up that hot vodka, huh? And my body screaming, and I'd just say, "Blah, blah, 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 blah." And I always drink half the half pint. And it just gets in the blood. Then it, nothing like hot vodka. Just pop it up, it's in there, right? Huh? And the nerves go back in the fingers. Brain subsides, relaxation, the 8 minutes comes. Finish that vodka and sit in the darkness of that car. And then I'd go home and destroy my family. And all the success. And we were all crazy. I'm a real violent drunk and a foul-mouthed, mean, sarcastic, vicious drunk. And I got drunk every night at home. And we were all crazy. Every time they do the ABCs, I always substitute the word family in my mind sitting at the table. No human power could have renewed my family. But through Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, God has saved my family. And we're a family story, my Al-Anon and I and our kids. We're all gone. It was too late. No human power could have relieved my family. My oldest son was working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. And never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee. I used to hit him up for a fifth about once a week. "What do you need, Dad?" You know. And his headband was too tight and his hair down to his butt and his head went like this all the time. He looked like one of those little dolls in the back of a car, you know. Called his mother, "Man, hey man, what's for dinner?" Oh, he loved LSD. They see things, you remember. And he used to scare the hell out of me. I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, "What was that?" I'd say, "I don't know what. What was it?" I wasn't that well myself, you know. My drunken mother-in-law lived with us, and she would say, "I'll explain it," you know. And my daughters who were in high school, we're talking about the late 60s, huh? My daughters were in high school. Their boyfriends looked like my son. Three of them used to get on the couch together. You should have watched that. Oh, God. You weren't sick before. You were sick directly after. And everybody hated everybody else. And it was this zoo. It was crazy. It was an insane asylum. Speech team. And in a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. Wasn't time yet. I know when it's time, don't you? I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year there were like 12 or 13 tournaments, 30, 40 schools in each tournament. My team took first place in every single tournament. But I can wait. The next year there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy, and I put my nose right against his, and I said, "Do you know where Oceanside is now?" And he just looked blank, you know. He said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Don't you remember about 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, Oceanside, where's that?" And he said, "We just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was."
That's the story of my life. This guy is in his bed in San Diego for 4 or 5 years. I'm up in Ocean. I'll get you, you dirty... You know, he's going through life. Bum, bum, and Roach is dying. Right after that, my wife and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. They didn't buy TVs till after I got sober. You know, they didn't need it. Oh, he's loading the car. There he goes. You know. Then in the morning, he's back. Come on. Look, he's kneeling and begging now. You know. But I threatened to move out, and they were all grateful. And I moved out and living down at the beach with my surfboard where I wanted to live anyway. Went by the house one afternoon, was haranguing my wife about money. And the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background, humming a tune from the planet Pluto. And I did something really stupid as I looked back on it. I turned to him and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? He looked me right in the eye and he said, it's beautiful. And that was my bottom. Kind of a weenie bottom of what are you going to do? You know, if you've been on death row or something, it isn't much. I didn't know it was my bottom for an hour, so I went back to that dump on the beach and ranted and raved and sniveled and whined, but I didn't take a drink. And I went out and on the screen porch, and I watched, which is to this day still the most beautiful sunset that I have ever seen. And about the time that the sun was going down into the water, I had that moment the big book talks about, that moment of clarity. Polly P. says it's a moment of grace. And I like that. That moment in my life when I had a chance. When I didn't have any more answers of my own. When I didn't have any plan of action. I was without power, and so I surrendered to the power that runs the universe. This Hubble telescope just gives us a little, maybe of an inkling in the twinkle of an eye, the kind of power that's there, that's ours, that we got in this program. And I know God comes to anyone, anywhere in the universe that calls to Him. But I believe Alcoholics Anonymous was created by that power for people like me. And at that moment, what I did is I went in the bedroom and I dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd read it before in my travels through the program. And being an English teacher, I said it was very poorly written. Somebody got in there and straightened that book out. I read that book for 3 days and 3 nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I ate a tiny bit. I slept a little bit. And I read that book, and I read it cover to cover. If you're new, I read all the stories. And then the second edition, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. And he was another egotistical school teacher. And he rang my bell. And on a third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And if you're new, on page 63, there's a little prayer, which is step 3. The formal terms of surrender. And in my befuddled condition, it seemed like it would be a good idea if I would kneel down, and the linoleum is almost exactly, except ours was dirtier. That pattern is the pattern. I knelt down on that dirty linoleum floor in that dump on the beach, and I read that prayer out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. When I was new, I looked up the word bondage. It means slavery. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I suffer from a terminal case of self-obsession. That is the nature of my disease. I suffer from a fatal case of self-obsession. I never
all my life I knew what was wrong with me. What was wrong with me, Dana was talking about it this morning. I always knew what my problem was, and I was right. I was not loved enough. See, but what I didn't know about me is there isn't enough. You ain't got enough. I'm the black hole of lovedom. Goes in there, you never see it again. Everybody who ever knew me tried to love me. My kids tried to love me. My wife tried to love me enough. You got everybody in the world, all the people in China ever said, let's love Cliff. I'd say, is that it? That's called self-obsession. The need to be loved. The need to be important. The need to be the center of attention. Incapable of concentrating 1 second on someone else. So that it's necessary for some people tonight to call out the number of the steps while the person reads them. That's called self-obsession. That's called look at me, 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 my, me. His Majesty the baby. And I don't have to do that. I can let you read when it's your turn, and you talk when it's your turn, and you cry when it's your turn, and I'll hold you when it's your turn. And I'll go to the end of the world to keep you from getting drunk, because I got to get out of me. I'm sick of me. I'm sick of thinking just about me. And some days I manage a half an hour or so at a time thinking about you, and it saved my life. But I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that I had surrendered to this power. That's all I knew, that I had surrendered to this power. And I've never had to look back since the 13th of January, 1970. That power has sustained me through major surgeries, through disasters, through grandchildren dying, through children drunk and shootings and abortions. That power's never let me go. Power's never even tried to let me go. Even when I tried to let go of that power. And that power's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that power's in Al-Anon. I know it's other places. But I don't have to worry about that. My power, my higher power, is in Alcoholics Anonymous. That evening, I'm over at Bill Blake's house. This is his little electrician. He's been dead now 6 years. I miss him every day of my life. I miss him. And this is where I'm going to disagree with Denny. He was an old-timer. And he was a mean, cantankerous, ornery, Nazi old sponsor. You know? But I knocked on his door that night. I always love to remember that night. The loser is back. 5 years in and out of AA, obnoxious, overeducated, pompous ass. I'm back again. The loser's on the porch. L on the forehead. Loser, you know. I often wonder what I would have said to me. Margie, his wife, opened the door and saw me there, and Margie said, Cliff. Oh, I've never seen anybody so glad to see me in my whole life. I mean, she just like glowed. She went, oh, in the house I go. Pours me the first of 8 trillion of these. She said, this is wonderful. She said, oh, this is so nice. She said, Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. This is wonderful. And Bill comes home about 10 minutes later. Cliff! Oh, God, yeah! In about a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? That's how they made me feel, you know. Cliff's here. We can start AA now, you know. 3 weeks later, I was in a newcomer meeting, and somebody said, I don't understand what you mean about this being a selfish program. And I thought, I do. See, I learned that the night I got here. I knew they were glad for me. They'd been praying for me for 5 years. But I believed them. They were glad for Bill and Margie. Because they know the great secret of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. You can't keep it unless you give it away. This is not a program for sitters and watchers. This is a program of doers. This is a program of evangelists. We're the leading evangelists of the world. You know, we can't have this. You can't keep it. It's impossible to keep it unless you give it away. I have found. And they gave it away better than anybody I've ever known. And I've never forgotten that. And anything I ever do in Alcoholics, whether it's come here and talk here, or whether when that phone rings at 1 o'clock in the morning, huh? I don't know how many other old timers are here, but I hardly ever leap out of bed and say, ah, a 12-step call. Oh, you know.
Do you? I don't know. Maybe you. And I say, nobody left an ocean side but me, for God's sakes. Oh, money, a trinket. Hello? Sure, put them on. You know, if you're new, you never have to do anything here cheerfully. You know, you can wait till we turn around and go. You just have to do it. That's all. Just do it and do it. Well, that's the last time Bill was ever nice to me in his whole life. He was my sponsor for 20 years, and I think the nicest thing he ever said to me was, shut up. He used to say, take the cotton out of your ears and stuff them in your mouth. Or other places he would tell me to stuff things, you know. I remember I told him, I have degrees, you know. He said, so's a thermometer, you know, where they stick out sometimes. But, you know, they get some guys sober 20 minutes nowadays. Get up, Leroy, and talk. I wasn't allowed to talk in the car. I'd say, well, nobody cares what you think. You don't know nothing. Shut up. He had a sign in his garage that says, sober up, clean up, and shut up. And he was what I needed. You know, Denny might have not liked him or the people you were talking about today. He was absolutely necessary in my life. And I knew he loved me. He never told me he loved me, but he proved to me that he loved me. He loved me enough to tell me the truth about me. You talk about 90 meetings in 90 days. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. I didn't think there was an alternative. And that sounds so stupid. He would say, I'll pick you up at 5 o'clock. Oh, God, we've got to go to L.A. His sponsor was a guy named Clancy, who was worse than him, you know. And so we would drive 100 miles, like twice a week, up to Clancy's. Or he'd say, I'll pick you up at 6:45. That meant we were going to San Diego. Once in a while, he'd say, I'll pick you up at 7:30. A local meeting. Oh, boy. You know. And we went everywhere in AA because he knew me. See, we went to meetings where people are laughing and scratching and kissing and hugging and having a good time. Where people are... The laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous is what saved me. I love to be where you are, you know. I love to be like in a big, huge convention, you know, when some fool's up here and we're just roaring together, huh? From the La Bonza, how we do, the tears running down. AAs and Al-Anons laughing together. There's a concept right there. There's a concept, huh? Laughing together. You know, the only thing more lonely and more terrible than to be a person like me is to be a person who loves a person like me. You want to talk lonely, and you don't even have any chemical help to help you through it. But when we get together, we like to take these new little young Al-Anons. We take them to AA speaker meetings. You know, and the guy's up here and he says, I fell in the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents. You know? And we're all going, yeah! And this new little Al-Anon's going, not funny, you know. And we just take her to another meeting the next night, you know. Then one night she throws her head back and laughs, huh? And we gotcha. I don't care if you're a new AA or a new Al-Anon, once we get you laughing, we gotcha. If you're new tonight in AA and you're laughing, you're screwed. Because you belong here, you know what I mean? See, I hadn't I don't know about you, but I had not laughed in a long time before I came. I don't even know how long it was. The only way I could, because I was slick. I saw some slick ones tonight. I can't even do my head like I used to. The only way I could laugh was like, you know, that's if you fell down and got hurt. I was sober 3 days in a meeting up in L.A. I went, ha ha! What was that? What was this? Scared. It's like stitches tearing in my La Bonza. And I've been laughing ever since. Oh, I love the laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I know there's a God. Because I know He loves us to laugh. I read a quote a couple of months ago. It said, sunshine is the laughter of nature. And I thought, uh-uh. Laughter is the sunshine of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all rocks that we got turned over when we got here. I want to tell you something if you're new. If you laugh at something, it'll never hurt you again. Once you laugh at it, I don't care what it is,
murder one on down. Once you laugh, you'll never scare you or you'll never have to fear it again. Laughter is what heals us. So don't you tell people, don't let you guys tell you that you got to keep a frown on your face and you got to be serious and you got to be angry in Alcoholics Anonymous. Clancy talks about the gray tunnel meetings. You ever hear him talk about that? Where these six guys sit around a table and stay sober. He says, in order to get the expression right, you have to have bad hemorrhoids. You know? And sobriety is a long gray tunnel and you trudge. Every year a trap door opens and a cake comes down. Not this alcoholic. My home group, we get a laugh a second. Oh, God. And we have discipline, but we laugh. We love the laughter. The other thing I know about God is this. I do a lot of 12-step work. I love to go get them. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. See, my little sponsor, when he died, we had a meeting, just had a meeting for him. Over 700 people showed up in that place, the place that people were coming out the windows. And Bill was not a, he was the worst speaker in the history of AA. He used to say, I've talked everywhere in AA once. It was awful. Terrible, stinking, rotten speaker. But you put him in the front seat of a car with a newcomer, he was magic. You couldn't escape him. He had that way with new people. Whatever you needed, he had it. With me, cruelty is what he had. With other people, he had a lot of kindness and a lot of consideration. Although one time at the Southern California Convention, these five guys were walking along. They're all from our area. All of them had 15 years, 20 years. You know, and they're walking down the corridor. Kind of big shots. And Bill's voice said, "Hey, dummy!" And all five of them turned around. He called me the dummy school teacher. That's what was I. Except when he was mad. Then he was like, "Goddamn, dummy school teacher." No. But, you know, over 700 people smashed in that for this little meeting we had for him. And I led the meeting and I said, how many of you here loved Bill? 700 hands shot in the air, you know. And I said, how many of you had a resentment against Bill? 700 hands shot in the air. You know, he never had a resentment. He was a carrier. He was one of those old-timers I felt like you were attacking today. And in his case, you were wrong because he saved countless lives. He brought his gift to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he gave it, and he gave it, and he gave it, and he gave it. He had emphysema for you smokers. Terrible way to die. But he, sick as he was, the last 10 years of his life, the only reason he stayed alive was because he wanted to help other people. And he was a taper like these two goofs over here. And he was a beautiful person like these two goofs over here. One of my great privileges in my life is I get to see people like that often. I know those two people better and love them more than the guy I taught next to for 30 years. And I see him, what, 25, 30 days a year. And I talk to him on the phone whenever I can. And just not those two, but that whole outfit. I love them all. That's one of the great privileges of being a speaker. You get to know people like that who bring their gifts. They drive hundreds of thousands of miles every year. They don't make any big money out of that deal. They carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in a lot of ways. And these kids that worked on this roundup, they know about bringing their gifts and sharing their gifts with other people. They've spent a year getting this thing ready. We're having a good time. We're getting a lot out of this. But we're not getting 1/1,000,000% of what these kids are getting out of it because they gave of themselves for the whole year so we could have this thing. And they got it all year and they're getting it now. And you know, there's a guy in my group named Carlos. He's just a goofy Mexican. He's got a car with a doll that goes like this, like my son. But that guy, if you're new in my meeting, he knows it. He has radar. I've never seen anybody like it. If nobody else shakes your hand when you're new in my group, finds you and tells you you're welcome and gives you their number, Carlos will find you. And I don't know what your gift is. I really have no idea. But I do know this. I know all of us have alcoholism and we're all the same. But all of us have our own particular brand of cuckoo-ness. You know, we all have our own insanity we bring here. But we also, all of us bring gifts here. And if I don't bring my gifts and share my gifts, then I'll have to die drunk. And I know that's true. And I believe that that's true about you too. And I know my sponsor believed that. He found out where you fit in AA and he told you to do it. He didn't ask if you wanted to. He told you to. But he took me everywhere in AA. And my sponsor didn't know anything about psychiatry. Too bad. Whatever was wrong in my life, he gave me an action to take. My kids were still doing drugs. You know, my wife wouldn't go to Al-Anon. Everybody was crazy. I'd go to his house weeping and screaming and yelling, "You know what they're doing over there now?" And he would listen to me whine. You know, I'd finally run down. And he would say, "Why don't you go get Al and take him to the meeting?" What the hell has that got to do with the nervous? You know, it's like saying, "What time is it?" The guy said, "The horse is dead." Then he'd just stare at me. So I'd go get Al, you know. I hated Al. Al was a bigger loser than me. He was a 10-year loser. He had no driver's license, of course. And he was a blowhard. So I'd load Al in the car, drive him to the meeting. Blah, 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 blah. Listen to this crap all the way. And we'd set the meeting up, make the coffee. They have the meeting. Everybody go home. Al and I would set the meeting down, clean the coffee pots. Had real cups in those days, remember? Al had to wash because he was so shaky. He just put his hands in the water and just stir, you know. But I could dry. Hey. You know. And I'd load him in the car and drive, blah, 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 drive him home. Listen to him all the way home. Let him off. And I'd start driving home. And this feeling would come over me. Used to scare the hell out of me. It felt so good. It's better than the 8 minutes had ever been. It would only last like maybe 30, 40 seconds. Just scare me. Actually, I thought it's because I got rid of Al. You know. And then, you know, and I had to make the coffee and I had to stand at the door and greet people. I hated that because I'm a snob. You know, "Hi there, I'm Cliff. What's your name?" Like I really give a shit. You know. And had to pounce on those, took me on all these 12-step calls, had to go and do and serve. See, he knew, all my life I knew my problem was I was not loved enough. My sponsor knew what my real problem was. My real problem was I never loved enough. My problem was I'd never loved at all. My problem was I did not know how to start to learn how to love. So he made me do loving things against my better judgment. He made me serve you. He made me get out of Cliff and see what I could do for you. He made me be of service. Mother Teresa said, "The fruit of faith is love. And the fruit of love is service. And the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity and I will know peace." Because I got out of Cliff enough to where I can feel all right about myself. And Al drank once more. I had a year and a half. He had almost a year and he drank again and he was just destroyed and he called and I went over and I was sitting on the couch holding both hands because he was just shaking and he was crying and I said, "It's all right, Al. It's one day at a time. We start today. We get going again. It's all there is. We'll start." And all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I said, "I love you, Al." And I knew that it was true. I knew that I loved that man as much as I love myself. That I wanted Al to be sober as badly as I wanted to be sober myself. And that was my beginning in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Al got sober. We became this fabulous 12-step team. We used to go together all the time. We did good guy, bad guy. You ever do that, you know? The one guy said, you got to shut your mouth, quit your whining, get your ass to the meeting. The other guy said, never mind him. Come here. I want to talk. Grew to love newcomers. One night, Clancy said, treat your kids like newcomers. What a concept. I went home that night and knelt down by the bed and said, you want the kids? Take the kids. My wife is already into releasing, the only pornographic word I know. She has it down with the smile. I'm releasing you. The Mona Lisa was an Al-Anon. God took those kids. Our youngest son, Chris, has 8 years of sobriety. He's very active. He speaks Spanish fluently. So he does in the jail. He does the Spanish speaking on Tuesday night. He does the English speaking meeting on Thursday night. The deputies are confused, but nobody else is. He sponsors a lot of guys who look like you, Harry. And my middle daughter, Jan, who was the most disturbed of all our children, has almost 9 years of sobriety. And she is this glowing, beautiful example of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never seen anybody change as much in the program as that girl has. And she sponsors all these gorgeous little honeys, you know, and they all call me Daddy. It's all right with me, I'll tell you. And she goes to my home group. We share our home group together. And our eldest daughter kind of went wrong. She's been in Al-Anon about 15 years now. And she's the DR for the area, and she's just a goer and a doer and a loving, wonderful human being. Our youngest daughter, Mary, just grew up straight in a crooked family. You know, there's always a weirdo like that. It just turns out fine. She's fine. And the eldest son, the hashish salesman, is a vice president of a company on the island of Maui and makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And is a tremendous success in the world. And he drinks too much. He asked me to come over and talk to him last August, and I went over 12-stepped, and we went through the book. And, you know, he'll come when he's ready. My son doesn't have to get sober for me. He only has to be who he is. And I don't have to be anything for him. We love each other for fun and for free. God, I hope he gets sober because his liver's bad, you know? But, you know, when you're a functioning alcoholic like he is. But we all love each other, I want to tell you. When we get together in our family, boy, there's a lot of laughter, and there's a lot of hugging and kissing and carrying on. We love life in my family. Last summer, my sister-in-law and her husband celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and all my kids and all of us went, and my grandkids and all of us, we camped for 3 days up in the mountains there by the Redwoods. And I was sitting in a chair with my wife, and I was watching my children dealing with my grandchildren. I was raised in insanity. My family, when I was a kid, was a zoo, was a crazy nut house. I put that on my children too, but by God, I got sober, and my wife, by God, went to Al-Anon. And I'm watching my children deal with my grandchildren in a mature, loving, disciplined way. And I said, the little genes down there, right? They found the little gene for alcoholism, little blue gene down at the end of the chromosome going, hey. My grandkids have the gene, but by God, they were at least were not raised in the insanity where I was raised. And we all love each other, and we all have a hell of a good time. The black ball, it's not gone. I'm not a recovered alcoholic. I never will be a recovered alcoholic. I don't argue with people who are. You can't argue with those assholes anyway. So just a little BB down there. Just a little BB. You know? But it's there. And if I don't do what Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do on a daily basis, every day of my life, if I were to let that everything go in AA for a while, the BB would grow. And then one day my brain would say, hey, Cliff, remember the 8 minutes? And I would be gone and I would be dead. But I believe the BB has disappeared, not because I worked on the BB, but because I worked on loving you. I worked on the absence of self-obsession, learning to get out of me and caring about you. One great philosopher said, there's only two emotions in the world. There's only two. There's love and there's fear. That's all. Then he said, they are mutually incompatible. It's impossible for me to be living in a state of fear as long as I'm in a state of love. And I was sober 2 years on a second inventory before I found out that was the name of the black ball. Fear. But because you've allowed me to love you, it's just a little BB down there. If you're new, this probably doesn't make any sense to you. It doesn't even make sense to me sometimes. You don't have to believe it's going to happen to you. You only have to believe that it did happen to me. But I want to tell you something. A sick, crazy nut like me lives almost every day of his life happy and joyous and free. And I hope you do too.